throw stuff in my mouth. That's it. Pardon me, it sounds like I have marbles in my mouth. Thank you very much, particularly Vladimir, for bringing us together for this important opportunity to analyze the meaning of the prosecution of Slobodan Milosevic, and what people who want peace on earth ought to do about it. I have to look at the case from and present it as I see it from a historical standpoint, because of the demonization and misunderstanding that are so pervasive. And all of the recent problems of aggression and international criminal justice that we've had. Humanity has struggled to create organizations that afford some opportunity for independence, true independence, economic and political and social, and peace. And among them, with the idea the Federation of Southern Slavs would be an important element in any hope for peace and independence from foreign economic, political, military exploitation. And when you look at the history before World War I, you see that there's a lot of evidence to support the idea that the Federation of Southern Slavs is of utmost importance to peace in that region and the viability of political independence for Slavic people from the south of Europe. And the beginning of that effort followed World War I. Many believing that at least the triggering factor in the violence was the assassination in Sarajevo. The first dismemberment or cannibalization, if you want to think of it that way, of the Federation of Southern Slavs occurred rapidly in April of 1941. It needs to be remembered and thought of in connection with even the charges in this trial. Suddenly in that first week of springtime, month of April, the Slavic Federation was invaded by Germany, by Italy, by Hungary, by Bulgaria, and even by Albania. And it was chopped to pieces. Croatia was given the appearance of political sovereignty and independence to the Nazi Ustaše government that wreaked havoc throughout the region for the next 4 years. But Slovenia was divided between Italy and, we think, Germany, but certainly Austria was part of Germany by the time after the Austrians. Was a major factor. So there goes your riches from the Six Republics after World War II. The occupation of Croatia, and which it really was, included Bosnia, as we see it today, or saw it after World War II in the new Federation of Southern Slavs. Bulgaria occupied Macedonia, half of that part of Serbia called Kosovo. Albania occupied the other half. Hungary came down as far as Novi Sad. I don't pronounce all these Yugoslav words right any more than I do all the English words. Vojvodina, whatever it is, an area that had a history during the Austro-Hungarian Empire, having a lot of Hungarians in there, but it was part of the Yugoslav Federation. So here you had a war of aggression, and the only proper definition of place at peace, with no threat to its neighbor, suddenly attacked and invaded by its neighbor's military forces. And among all the studies of human misery, which are many and some are dire, you don't find many that were really worse than 4 years the early 40s, is what has been called Yugoslavia from time to time. The genocides, Romani and Serb, and anybody else that happened to look wrong to someone. Then finally came the end of World War II. At Nuremberg, the tribunal following the charter, which listed as the first crime against peace, the war of aggression, determined that the war of aggression was the supreme international crime, and included among the wars of aggression that were adjudicated, and the defendants accused and found guilty, was the catalyzation of Yugoslavia. We talk about history repeating itself. When I first went into Yugoslavia, in 1946, I was a young Marine. The plane was shot at. I still remember without the wind pushing in the aircraft by. I thought, why are these people shooting at us? It took me a long time to realize how right they were. They were shooting at us because they were angry. I didn't think we had any business coming in there. I just went in to deliver mail, so to speak, classified documents or courier service link or anything. I went back in 51 and went to the country, saw it reviving. I mean, the devastation was still as bad as it was all over. I've seen all this devastation really all the way out to Moscow, Warsaw, and all of it in 1945 and 1946. But the people were together, and the Yugoslav Federation was working. It was working. But somehow or other, with all the history and all the problems and all the national divisions, there was cohesiveness. And it had the strength among all the Eastern European countries to lead in maintaining a high degree of independence between the United States and Western powers and the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc. It helped form the non-aligned, and it was hard to kick around. It was right in the middle. With the collapse of the economy of the Soviet Union, the Soviet Bloc, the leading economic potential in the whole region was Yugoslavia. And it was growing and dynamic for anybody who went in there. But if by U.S. standards this was to be the end of history, it could only thereafter be one form of government, and that is capitalist plutocracy, if that's not redundant. because the United States is not a democracy, it's a gross misunderstanding to think it is. It is governed by the wealth of the country, the wealthy people of the country. They own the media, they own the Pentagon, they own the munitions factories, they own the major corporations, and they determine the policy of the government. And that's not democracy. And you say each party, each major party, you only have two, which means you have no real choice because they both have to say the same thing or they'll lose. You've got to get 51% of the votes. When they both spend $1 billion in campaigns, and 40% of the people don't even think it's worth voting, and you don't call that a democracy. But anyway, Yugoslavia had to go. If you doubt it, why would Congress of the United States insist, bypassing the federal government of Yugoslavia, that each of the six republics hold elections to elect governments, setting aside the governments they have, and unless they did that within a year, there would be no foreign aid, there would be no U.S. cooperation with the individual republic, not with the federal government of Yugoslavia, which had none anyway, couldn't expect it. And there would be sanctions separately against the republics as there were sanctions, economic sanctions, then imposed on the Federation. And then you saw the beginning of the coming apart of the Federation. By far the bloodiest war for the United States of America, that is our, we ever fought. We fought precisely to prevent the breakup of the Republic of the United States, the Civil War. We lost more lives of American soldiers in war than all of our other wars put together, from the Indians to what we call the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812 against the British, the Mexican-American War, when we took half of Mexico by force. We took in Texas, my state, previously, by force. All the way through World War I and World War II, more killed in the Civil War. And the sole basis of the Civil War, some say it was free of slaves, but let me tell you, they weren't about free of slaves, they were about holding the Union together because they had to have this aggregate power. And it's precisely what they intended to deny to Yugoslavia. You saw Slovenia split off first, fairly peacefully, and you saw the president of Yugoslavia negotiate that loss for the federal republic. You saw Croatia withdraw, and immediately countries like Germany recognizing it, member of the Union in no time, breaking up this federal republic. It was created by the League of Nations, so to speak, the first time, as an essential defeat. And then you saw the miserable time in Bosnia. Before all this, 90% of all the economic trade of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia was among the six federations. In truth, the economic viability of any of the republics depended on that association. The ability to exploit, dominate them is overwhelming without it. And that's what's happening, and that's what it's about in part. It was also to make a psychological point that it was a failure. The system didn't work. You saw Macedonia come off. Now, you see, we're not at the end. I've got in this packet two articles from the New York Times, the 22nd and 23rd of this month. On the 22nd, Frank Carlucci, who was long-time CIA executive, agent two executive, and Secretary of Defense for almost 2 years in the Reagan administration, and then head of the Carlisle Institute, and we need to know what that is if we want to have freedom in this place, and he's now president emeritus of the Carlisle Institute, and he's saying, let's not forget the war. The war that is not over. And the war that's not over that he's talking about is Kosovo. And he says, the only solution is the total independence of Kosovo. Does he know what people of Serbia think about that? Do you know the historic meaning of that? Do you know what's happened in Kosovo since the war of aggression by the United States and some of his NATO friends at that time? And what is the plan? The plan is to complete the independence by mid-2006. And this isn't just a casual article. This is what the United States intends to do in Kosovo. On the 23rd, you have the Prime Minister and the President of Montenegro saying that separation and full sovereignty of Montenegro now is essential. So you have not only lost five of the republics, but only Serbia, but Kosovo and Montenegro will be out. And how long will it be before the other parts of Serbia? So that, you know, Balkanizing is a verb in the English language. It means breaking into small parts. It comes from the history of the Balkans. So they will Balkanize the Balkans as they've never been Balkanized before. And who's to blame for all this? Well, of course, Slobodan Milosevic is to blame for all this. Who else? He was blamed for doing what Abraham Lincoln did in the Civil War, and that is trying to preserve the Union. I hate to use American analogies, but that's where I come from, that's what I know most. Lincoln said many times that his whole purpose was to preserve the Union, in other words, to preserve the Federation of States that made the United States. And here the sole purpose of the United States was to destroy the Yugoslav Union. So the end of history would be real. And to do that, you had to demonize and destroy the leadership that sought to preserve the Yugoslav Union. And to have its way, the United States had to corrupt the UN and international justice. And the way it did it was by causing the Security Council and a woman with great personal passions on the subject, pregnancy, you might say, Madeleine Albright, led the effort in the Security Council, caused the Security Council to authorize a criminal court to try those who were responsible for crimes against humanity and war crimes in former Yugoslavia, when the supreme international crime is the war of aggression. And the war of aggression that was waged against Yugoslavia was not only political and economic, it was military, from beginning to end. And it's still going on there. If equality is the mother of justice, if equal justice under law is the founding principle of the rule of law, then the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia fails to meet both of those standards because it persecutes only enemies of the United States to ensure further domination of the region. And in a sense, it's more deadly than the bomb. I can serve you in the early part of the bombing in early May and in the last part in June. And the bombing was deadly. I mean, there were cluster bombs and apartment developments in Novi Sad and the major hospital complex in Niš and all over Belgrade. Billions of dollars of destruction of property and thousands of deaths against the safety defenseless people. And there were anti-aircraft fire that started the plane. I was on 1946, was far more capable of defending the country than any anti-aircraft fighter that had against the U.S. military assault on, on Serbia. You bombed Serbia to protect that part of Serbia called Kosovo, which is doing. But more important in a simple way is how it corrupted the United Nations. Because the United Nations Charter, and you can read it as long as you want to, and you'll never find any provision that authorizes the creation of the International Criminal Court. And there would never have been a United Nations. If there had been any suggestion that that charter contained the power to create an International Criminal Court. Because the people that wrote the charter would never have permitted themselves to be subjected to the power of that court. Because they don't intend to be accountable to anyone. Which is why you see the United States of Beavers opposing the ICC. Why you see it running from country to country, trying to persuade the country to enter into a bilateral treaty, not to surrender U.S. citizens or U.S. personnel, and maybe aliens in the U.S. military, to the ICC. Because they intend that their agents be above the law. The court itself is illegal. Its offer violates the charter. And unless that's addressed, precedent will remain, even if the practice, as we hope, of creating ad hoc tribunals to pursue specific entities. And some of us, Chris Black has just spent 3 months on only one of many trips to Tanzania, where the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda sits. And all the blood that was spilled in Rwanda in 1994, the majority was clearly the blood of Hutus. Hutu has never been indicted in that court. The U.S. surrogates, the Tutsis, have never been indicted. But they're responsible for most of the deaths. They invaded the country, if not hours before, at least hours after, the plane carrying the presidents of Burundi and Rwanda appeared to cause the outbreak of violence. They were invading already. They had prepositioned people. They had a regiment in the capital of Rwanda itself, the army. And they soon took over the whole country, and there has never been a case against them. They've caused thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of deaths of Hutus. And after 1994, they've caused deaths of Hutus in Eastern Zaire, they caused in Congo. And they've been in the U.S. service in Congo, and for Burundi, and for Rwanda, and for Uganda. And they're above the law. While the Hutus are systematically persecuted, more than 110,000 are still kept in prison since 1994, or they were caught thereafter, without trials. The vast majority without even being charged in Rwanda. And here you have this symbol of international justice, illegally created by the Security Council, again against the insistence of the United States, prosecuting or persecuting the leaders. So what it is those who, I borrow a phrase from Professor Singh, those who heroically resist, as President Roosevelt did, aggression and the domination of their countries, pay the price. What you have done is you've used what you call international justice and power as a weapon of war by other means, and deadly war. Look at the fairies for a minute. Robert H. Jackson, who was our, couldn't say how in the U.S., but I still consider it part of my responsibility. That's why I act so frenetically to protesting for awful conduct, because the highest form of patriotism is to protest what your country does when it's wrong. not praise what it does when it's right. But particularly not praise what it does when it's wrong. But what you see is the use of these courts criminally, and Jackson at Nuremberg, which had its problems, observed that the record on which the Nuremberg case would be tried would be the same record on which history would judge the judges at Nuremberg. Here you have the investigation of President Milosevic beginning in 1994, in the fall, October, November. For 2 years plus, the first chief prosecutor investigated as diligently as his capacity permitted the culpability of Slobodan Milosevic for what happened in Slovenia and in Croatia and in Bosnia and a few other places. And running his memoirs after he left, he found no evidence. Then Louise Arbour succeeded him. And in May of 1999, she brought the indictment of President Milosevic for acts that allegedly had occurred earlier in 1999. Not in Slovenia, not in Croatia, not in Bosnia, but in Kosovo. At a time when the UN was bombing the daylights out of Pristina. Not to mention the rest of Serbia. They had all these years to investigate. They presented over a period of more than 300 days of trial, 200 witnesses, 36,000 pages of transcript, 500,000 documents in the case. And they've had President Milosevic arguing with him most of the time as to whether he could even speak in court or represent himself in any degree, isolated from support. And he's supposed to defend this case under those circumstances. There's no intention that he should be able to defend the case or to present his evidence. And even now you see a bunch of judges haggling at him after the long period in which they tried to present evidence but failed of his involvement, saying you're too slow, or that's irrelevant or improper, or you're making a political speech or something like that. But we don't want history to have to judge this record, to judge this court, because we know now that the court is illegal, and we know now that its purpose is to destroy opposition to the United States. But there's one extremely important, extremely optimistic and even happy side of this otherwise miserable story. And that is the role of the human spirit. President Milosevic, yesterday when some of us met with him, asked that his very best wishes be extended to everyone here, which I do. His deep concern for the future of Yugoslavia and his great joy that there are people who recognize it and stand up to see a better day tomorrow. And his spirit is absolutely undaunted. In more than 4 years of solitary confinement, essentially, cut off from family, cut off from friends, cut off from all forms of support, demonized constantly. The Michael Jackson trial getting 1,000 times more attention than the Slobodan Milosevic trial. I mean, that sick, pitiful little trial. Michael Jackson is supposed to be worthy of the attention of the world. But it is what we hear about. And his fighting spirit is higher than ever. I've watched the law for a long time. You can tell by looking at my face. And I don't know a more heroic resistance for an individual under every form of adversity to stood up tall and resisted heroically. And more than that, for those who heard and can understand, demonstrated that the real criminal acts were by those who were breaking up the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia and not those who were trying to preserve the Union. The violence and deaths were caused by the others, overwhelmingly. And they are the ones who created the court and the seeking justice. But the question is, what do we do? I think first we have to help create the understanding that the real criminal conduct that must be examined is the war of aggression against the former Republic of Yugoslavia, it's called. And demand accountability for that. I think we also have to insist that there be full support for a new effort, for a new federation for Southern Slavs and others in the Balkans. Otherwise, they're going to be servants in the basement of Europe. There'll be no future, no real hope for them. They're not only cannibalized, they're atomized. We have to free Slobodan Milosevic. We have to see that the ad hoc criminal tribunals of the Security Council are declared illegal, as they obviously are. And if we want peace, we have to do that which many people are skeptical about, and that is to create a criminal court that can hold power accountable. Because what we're looking at now is the abuses of power, including the corruption of criminal justice, to have its way. And it has to begin somewhere. And we have to help find the means for financing, staffing, and supporting the ongoing effort to bring to the attention of the public and those who have the power to accomplish some of the things that we believe are essential to the future of the planet and peace. Because the threat of the war of aggression today on the planet and the devastation that it can wreak far exceed anything humanity's experienced to date. So in the name of and spirit of Slobodan Milosevic, let's believe that we shall overcome and ask for you. Thank you.